let's bring in Patrick Johnson into the conversation. Follow him on Twitter at Rising Action with the Province Canucks coverage. PJ, how's it going, man? How are you?
I'm good, gentlemen. Happy fall.
Yeah.
Nice run.
Is this today officially the first day of fall?
I think, what's today? No, it was earlier this week, 21st, 22nd, so not today.
Oh, yesterday or something. It really does feel like fall today, though. I'll say that.
It's all the same day to me right now.
It's supposed to be the end of training camp and the beginning of preseason and all that. So my brain's still a little bit weird, but I'll survive.
We're used to talking player contracts and trades in preseason and training camp because that's something that the Canucks have been, having to deal with, especially even last year with Brock Besser's contract. I think it was signed around this time last year, pretty much, right? So these are the big things that we've been talking about for a long time. But now the Canucks offseason is fully here. On Friday, teams can start buying out players. The draft is just over, a week away, just 2 weeks away from free agency beginning. The big question is, how much closer can the Canucks get to signing Jacob Markstrom and Tyler Toffoli? And you would have to imagine that this next week to 10 days is really critical here, PJ.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was interesting hearing Earp earlier saying, he's not sure the Canucks have made their best offer yet. And I guess they got the strategy, which is to kind of get to the drop dead. And, when he gets signed, he gets signed. And that's your story. I mean, the sort of timing of it, once it happens, doesn't matter. So I get that, but it has been an on again, off again discussion for a year. And, I think it seems to me everybody knows where everyone stands and what's likely to happen, what's not likely to happen. So, you kind of leave it at that. I just, there's nothing left to move except the sort of final equation and what that's going to look like. So, if that's going to happen, it's going to happen. And I mean, to me, it doesn't matter whether it happens this week or next week, or October 15th, you know what I mean? Like, in the end, I think the Canucks know what it's going to be, and Markstrom knows what, or Markstrom's camp knows what it's going to be, and it either is or it isn't. Kind of, I think it really is an up-down proposition. The Toffoli question, of course, I certainly think, we're all kind of hearing the same thing. The Canucks are really hoping to get that done, and I think even from the outside, we can see the numbers that make sense.
Yeah,
and there's clearly value in the player because of his age. Like, he's still, he's not a young budding star anymore. He's an established veteran with a pedigree who's still going to keep scoring goals for, likely the duration of that contract. He is going to probably hit his down window sometime in the next couple seasons, but he's still going to be scoring. This isn't a case of signing a guy who's already into his 30s, who's coming off a career high shooting percentage, that kind of thing. This is a guy that is an established player that makes sense, and we can see how he fits into the Canucks lineup quite easily.
So I understand the frustration when you look at the other contracts that were handed out in the past and people look at it and say, well, why'd you pay those guys? You're not paying these guys. It is more nuanced too, because yes, you are facing a cap crunch right now. But I do kind of wonder, looking at these negotiations, it mattered a few years ago too, and it should have mattered more, every 100K you can save on a contract. But right now, literally, every 100K you can save or perhaps save on Markstrom or Toffoli getting those deals done can have a big impact on the decisions they have to make on other guys. That's how tight they are. So it does make some sense for them to be fighting this hard for that extra 100K or 200K. The question is, do you fight so hard that you alienate one side towards the end? With Toffoli, I agree. I think that's something you can get done. The Markstrom one's a bigger question. But I do understand that they're in a position now, PJ, where they're forced to haggle over every single 100K and 50K.
Ironic, though, isn't it? I mean, we know the story. That, there are contracts sitting there that are causing problems in the big picture that they probably should have, Jimenez should have haggled a little more over. That in the end, you're in this position because you weren't careful before. And in the end, it is a lesson about how to manage your cap, that you can't, you can understand why they assumed it was just going to keep going up, and there'll be less pressure. But, I think this is such a reminder that that's actually silly thinking. That, the more you haggle in the past, the more that gap would have been. You would have more room to make moves, to find ways to get creative. I'm not saying you have to necessarily be the Leafs, because, of course, the Leafs have their own sort of cap pressures, and that the market they play in demands a lot of money. But there are teams out there that think really carefully about these things and think really carefully about how you structure your cap. And there's no one perfect way to do it. But, you know, until this past season or two, I don't think the Canucks have been very wise in how they've done that. And now they're going to pay the price for that, it looks like. You know, the decisions they have to make are decisions they shouldn't want to be making. And it's going to be difficult. And you're right. You're right. Shaving down everybody you can. I mean, they won last year in Alizette. Like, let's be clear. You know, they knew this is a player that didn't want to go anywhere, player that had a price that was clear what he would settle for, and they got him at that. And that's a big win for them. And the cap structure benefits. It's going to be, you know, less. I mean, imagine they had the same kind of through line thinking that they had that led them to giving Jay Beagle 4 years or Antoine Roussel 4 years. You know, you land in that spot with a guy like Edler, and all of a sudden you are in a huge problem trying to re-sign Hughes and Pettersson next year. And those should be your focus. Those guys, those are your best players. You need to keep them around. You need to keep them happy. And how you structure your lineup matters to players like that. They think about what's around them more than ever. They, of course, love their teammates and love the guys they're with and want to love the guys they're with, but they also want to see the lineup being set optimally. And, you know, you can understand why Markstrom's camp would be frustrated, because they would turn around and say, well, you paid all those guys all this money. Why can't we pay the guy that actually gets you wins?
I want to remove the names for a second of Markstrom, Tanev, Toffoli, and the entire market when we've talked about bringing guys in here.
Mm-hmm.
The holes the Canucks need to fill are number one goalie, mm-hmm. top four D-man, top six winger, and third line center. Those are the primary four, right? There's a couple of other things, but those are the primary four. Which of those would you attack first?
I think it's a great question. I think goalie is the first one. I really think that. You know, I think the truth of the matter is that you are only going to go so far as your goaltending depth. If next season is, you know, it's a season that starts in, say, late January, early February, and they're trying to get as many games in as possible, that means having two good goalies, no matter who it is. You know, Thatcher Demko is going to be a good goalie for you. You've got to bank on that. You know, and if it isn't Markstrom as the other guy, you know, you need to find someone who's steady and reliable, who's going to do, you know, be able to put up a big effort. We know the Canucks are going to try to improve their defense. That's always been clear. You know, we know that they do play a bit of a style that does allow for higher levels of shots, that they did try to make sure. I mean, we saw it in the Vegas series. You know, they obviously bled way too many shots overall, but they did have a clear effort in that they were trying to eliminate those cross-ice passes, you know, passes that make the goalie move. They wanted to give their goalie a chance to face the shot, and that's what mattered to them. You know, they still wanted to be down at the other end of the ice more often, of course, but, you know, they need a good goalie. They need a goalie that's going to play in the system. They need a goalie that's going to be durable. Yeah, and then, you know, you start building from there. I mean, I think more than anything, they're going to want to look for a defenseman because they need to be able to move the puck up the ice. They certainly have some interesting kids coming in, into consideration. I'm not sure Jack Rathbone really is ready to go right away, but certainly his skill set is a player that suggests he could help in that regard in the long run. We know Brogan Rafferty can skate, and we know that he put up points in the AHL. We don't know if he can defend. We don't know if he can distribute the puck at this level. And we don't know if he can hold on to the puck long enough. You know, that means that they're playing more offense than defense, which is what they want to do. So, you know, I think likely they look for a defenseman. And the forward, you know, I think, you know, if you keep Toffoli, you're feeling pretty happy. You know, Besser could be an option, I suppose, if they try to pick up Matt Dumba. I've written about that in the past. But I think the preference is that, you know, you have as many guys in hand as you can. Besser is a guy that should work on your top two lines. Toffoli should work on your top two lines. I mean, that's just, you make it work. You get your good players together and you make it work. You don't overthink it. But yeah, I think goalie clearly to me is the priority. We know how important they are to this team setup, and how important they've been to their performance. It's a pretty open the door shut for me.
You kind of alluded to it there, and it's Patrick Johnson joining us from the Province Paper, our Canucks insider. You know, going through them all, do you think they can adequately fulfill all four at a price point that, you know, and the media would approve of?
That is an interesting question. I'm not answering because I don't personally know. I just look at the market and how crazy it is. It's such a bananas market. And, you know, this was something I talked briefly with Jim Benning about last week. I said, you know, we were, you know, asking you basically about the overall picture. And he said, yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, of course, there's lots of calls. There's always calls. Guys are trying to figure out what's going on. But he said, more than anything, it's about all of them trying to figure out what the heck the market really looks like. What are the options that are really out there? What are other teams going to do? It's interesting when you look at, you know, you look at cap friendly and who is actually below the cap floor right now. It's not necessarily teams that you would anticipate, but it is, you know, there clearly are teams that are operating on a budget that are, you know, needing to get to a minimum, but don't want to get beyond that because quite simply, they're just not generating any revenue. And, you know, they're kind of bunkering down to try to survive in a situation where they're not bringing any money in. They don't know when fans are going to be in the stands. I mean, certainly you read about, you know, the fears that English soccer is having about not having fans in the stands. And obviously, you know, those are big money operations. And I don't think the NHL is going to be any different in that, and the concerns of spending and that sort of thing. So that to me is the real question. I think there could be some real bargains out there. You know, you're never going to necessarily find a first line winger for a cut rate price, but you could find yourself a second line winger. I mean, I look back, say Eric Staal 4 years ago. I mean, I think everybody was pretty convinced he was going to go to Minnesota, but Eric Staal was coming off a down year. And the offer that he landed, I thought was hilarious. I couldn't believe how little. And I said, that's a player that's going to bounce back. And he, of all the contracts signed that summer, was so clearly the best value for money. And he was a guy that I think, you know, that's the kind of player that's going to be out there. There's going to be players out there who are coming off low percentage seasons that are good bets to bounce back. And guys that in the end probably historically don't command a big salary in free agency. I also think there's going to be guys that are going to be saying, you know what, I'm willing to sign for 1 year. That, you know, obviously in my, you know, historical context, I would be going for a multi-year deal, but right now I need to bet on myself a little bit and hope that the market's bigger next year. And maybe I'll take a chance and sign a 1 year deal. And, you know, maybe the Canucks are a good fit for that kind of a contract.
Patrick Johnson, the province, our guest here on Sports at 650. And PJ, my question with the Canucks too is, they have options to look at different things, and I'm sure there are things they want to do in free agency, and there's a lot of options to go after. But there's never a certainty that you can end up getting the guy in free agency you want, whether it's a goalie, defenseman, or a forward. And I think that's right. Also driving a lot of trying to get Markstrom, Tanev, and Toffoli signed and figure out the rest after that, because at least you get those guys done and you have some certainty in those types of positions. Because as much as I look at, and Elliot's right when he talked yesterday, there's a number the Canucks won't go beyond, right? And at some point, you're going to roll the dice with somebody else. But I still have a hard time believing that the Canucks, you know, like Irf mentioned, I also believe they haven't made their best offer to Markstrom, that they don't take a big run at getting this done. Because as much as Marc-Andre Fleury, it's interesting, I think so as well, has worked with Clark in the past, there are other guys who are interesting in theory. But based on how this team plays, I would imagine they're probably a lot more reluctant to let Markey go than it seems right now publicly.
Oh, for sure. There's a certainty to him that you are going to bank on. You're absolutely right. I mean, switching to another goalie means either changing your system or getting a new goalie to learn how you play and what Ian Clark's looking for from you. And that's a big variable. In the end, you want to bank on things that, you know, you can rely on, that you can anticipate. And switching to another goalie has a cost to it in terms of that thinking. And, I think that's absolutely it. I do think that goes back to the next question about how you set your priorities, what you're looking for. And that to me is open and shut again. Why you look at your goalie and you hope to get Markstrom sorted out, or you figure out whoever else it's going to be and you work forward from there.
How willing do you think the team, and we know that the Canucks will be a cap team based on all the reporting, but how willing do you think ownership would be to really weaponize Louis Erickson? And by that, I mean the $5 million owed, take on a big contract. We're talking about taking on $10, $15 million off somebody's hands. Like, is that something that they would truly be willing to do? Because Irf also mentioned they're looking, at least exploring, replacing Manny Malhotra, you know, a new hire, right? Which if they do that, shows you that, you know, they'd be willing to spend as opposed to promoting somebody from internally perhaps. But how much of an appetite is there? Because if they don't want to retain salary on Louis deals right now, that would lead me to believe that they think they have other options. But how far would they be willing to go on something like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's something that Jim Benning told me last week, was that, yeah, they were absolutely interested in finding a replacement. Like that's a priority for him, if they want to figure that out. They value that role. They value having that sort of eye-in-the-sky in-game analyst. And, it's hard to see them wanting to go away from that. And that's one of the challenges of running a team in the modern context. Like you're looking at the fact you still have to put a team in the ice, you still have to hire staff, you still have to chase after the best things that build out a championship team, and that's going to cost money, and you are going to almost without a doubt spend more money this season than you're taking in. And if you're really going for it, that could be a big disparity in the red. And, let's be honest. There was a time when you got into sports because you loved it. Now you get into sports because you make money. And, Aquilini's have made a lot of money in the last 15 years owning this hockey team. The last few seasons haven't obviously been successful because they weren't in the playoffs. But, there's a reason why this team, why they own this team. And it was to make money. And that's been true of all their businesses, that they, no matter what you think of their approach, they do it because they make money. They wouldn't be in it if they weren't. And, that is going to be a pill for them to swallow, because as it stands in the short term, they're not in a position to make any. And, every decision I'm sure is being carefully considered. In the end, as you said, this is a team that we believe is still going to spend certainly on salaries and certainly on sort of the front window. The things that do get you wins are the players. Whether the stuff around the edges is as much of a priority as it maybe was in the past, we'll see. And everyone will be a bit more understanding given the current context, because they can see the fact that there's no fans in the stands, and that's where, the stuff around the edges comes from. So we'll see. I think it is a difficult question. It's certainly a difficult period for any owner. We certainly see it. We know that it's itself on the business side already, that there are, there have been layoffs already, terminations. There have been people leaving. Slowly but surely, people are being told that, essentially, unless things change, here's what's going to happen. And, unless things change and they play hockey, it's sort of survive for as long as you can with what you have, and see if you can keep going with perhaps even less.
I do want to cycle back to something that you said about what the market might look like this offseason. And look, I'm trying to get a grasp on it. I feel like everyone's trying to get a grasp on it. That's all valid. I'm not asking to answer that. But when do you think we'll start to get an indication of what it might look like? Because I look at, this Friday, obviously, the buyout window comes up. And then there's, we're less than 2 weeks away from the draft and 2 weeks away from the start of free agency. A lot's got to go through here in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I was talking to someone the other day, and they pointed out, the Stars and Lightning, for instance, are going to have next to no time between the end of the Stanley Cup final, the draft, and then free agency. And, normally teams have, a month, sometimes, not that long, but, 2 or 3 weeks at least between the draft and the end of the Stanley Cup final. Certainly, almost a month between the end of the Stanley Cup final and the beginning of free agency. And, most, let's be honest, teams are, of course, can hold more than one thought at the same time, so they are planning ahead. But, the priority tends to be the next thing. And it's going to be difficult for some teams to really get their head around what their current situation is and what their situation is going to be going forward. I think the market, I think the bio window certainly is going to make things interesting. I have absolutely no doubt about that. We'll see how that plays out. There's certainly going to be a lot more consideration for what that all means in the financial sense,
because teams, you know, in the end, I think across the board are going to be looking to spend less money. And that said, you know, are there teams that almost going to be like, you know what, it's better off if we don't buy this guy out? That could be a consideration if you think about it. You know, you look at a team like Arizona, who right now aren't in a cap problem. Like, the amount they already have committed, they don't need to add a contract. I mean, I've pitched Louis Erickson as a contract that would be interesting to them in the past because of how little cash is actually left and the fact that it is a $6 million cap hit. But that said, Arizona, as it stands, is fine. That said, they are also a team that we know their ownership. You know, again, this is another team where you have to look at the rest of their business to get a sense of what the current business, the hockey business is doing. And that's an owner that deals in hospitality, and hospitality is not in a good way. Casinos are not in a good way. And if that's, you know, essentially how he's paying for the rest of his business, that's going to make things difficult. And I think we are going to get some more clarity. I mean, we've already seen some trades. The Joel Edmondson trade, to me, was a sign that we know Mark Bergevin certainly thinks in unique ways, but that was a trade to me that said this is a team that's really trying to get things locked down, and they see a player that they'd rather just get and not have to risk him perhaps signing with another team, and so you're paying with picks. It was the same thing, you know, that was the story from St. Louis when they traded Jake Allen. Like, they know there's going to be a lot of goalies moving. And this was a time to actually get value that they thought may not be there later on. And, again, Montreal, there's Montreal making a move. I think we're starting to see that there are going to be teams that are going to be aggressive. And there are teams that are going to be looking to be clearly going to be sellers. I don't know how that plays. I don't quite know how that plays for the players who are going to free agency. I certainly think, you know, when you talk to agents, everyone seems to think this is the year where the top end guys are going to draw the money and basically everybody else is going to be fighting for scraps. And, you know, that middle tier defenseman, that sort of Troy Stetcher type may not be getting the payout that perhaps he would have gotten in years past. Maybe, as I said before, maybe Ben Hutton last year was the warning sign of all that. But certainly, I think that's going to be the reality this year. And I don't think we're going to have a crush signing October 9th. I think we'll see some really interesting moves. But I don't think it's going to be an instant floodgate necessarily the way it's been in the past, just because teams are still scrambling, trying to figure out what they're doing.
He is Patrick Johnson, courtesy of The Province. Check him out on Twitter, @RisingAction. His latest available on theprovince.ca. Always great chatting with you, PJ, and we look forward to talking with you again next week. And maybe, just maybe, next week when we chat, we'll be talking about Canucks, at least one player, putting pen to paper.
It would be nice. I mean, it's funny. We're having this actually quite short off season, and I'm already ready to talk about, you know, real things happening as opposed to just speculating.
I hear you. I mean, we've crammed in months of speculation into the past 3 weeks, and it just seems exhausting at this point.
All right, boys. Take care.
Great stuff. That is Patrick Johnson, Rising Action on Twitter.